I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to explore the realms of the imagination and those places in which the spirit can soar. We're going to talk about the New Harmony Project, the theater, the cinema, and the creative spirit. My guests are Ed Fry, the executive director of the New Harmony Project, and Robert Schenken, a Pulitzer Prize and Tony Award-winning playwright and a Golden Globe-nominated screenwriter. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email is nolimitswfyi.org. Facebook is nolimitswfyi. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about the New Harmony Project and its marquee event coming up, an evening with the Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright, actor, screenwriter, Robert Schenken at the IRT. My guests are Ed Fry. He is the executive director of the New Harmony Project. He's with us here in studio, and we'll be joined by Skype Robert Schenken here shortly. Ed, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. It's so good to be here.
And I should say to our listeners, if you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, Ed, let's talk a little bit about what the New Harmony Project is.
Absolutely. The New Harmony Project was started over 30 years ago down in the little idyllic community of New Harmony, Indiana. And it was put together by a group of folks really out of the University of Evansville. The catalyst for that was Jeff Sparks, of course, very well known around the community here in Indianapolis. He pulled together some folks, being John David Lutz, one of the theater directors down there at the University of Evansville, a man named Walt Wongren, Gary Beyer, an actor, Matt Williams, and a few other folks that just came together. What they were responding to was, especially in that time in the 80s, was the sensationalization of plays and how competitive it was to get something that really was enthused and inspired and spoke more deeply to the human condition. And so that was the catalyst for starting this. They shared that vision with who was called the matriarch, Jane Owen, of New Harmony, the community in the village down there. And she caught on to the spirit right away, and it really worked into that spiritual and utopian community that they still hold down there. From that, it has just grown. And what we do with the New Harmony Project out of that is support and develop those playwrights in a non-competitive atmosphere and bring them down there to work on those new projects and see where they go that really fits in with the ethos of our mission and our objective.
So how does it work? I mean, how does one become involved with the New Harmony Project? How do you select the playwrights who will come there?
Right. We have an artistic director. His name is Mead Hunter. And we also have a project director. His name is Joel Grinheim. And we have this wonderful board that works with us and various writers that have been fellows and alumni of the project before, who we all work together. Beginning around August of each year, we have an open submission process. And what happens is those playwrights will find out about this, submit to that submission process, and we'll begin the process of reading through those plays, those things that fit into the rubric of, like I say, our ethos, the mission of uplifting the human condition, uplifting and enlightening the human experience. And also the idea, is this play far enough along that we could really do some development work with it down there. And what happens as that is whittled down, I think we had around 300 submissions this year. And we whittled that down to two plays that we really felt stood out that we call full development plays. And we've invited those two writers here. With that full development, they will receive a director, a dramaturg, and actors where they will workshop this play for 10 days in New Harmony and work it until we hope that playwright walks away with a script in hand that they are very proud of and feel like it's ready for production at that point. We don't do the production. We just work with the
It's basically the rehearsal process.
Absolutely.
And refining and rewriting. So yeah. These are not finished plays. It's got to be a work in progress.
It has to be a work in progress, exactly.
But it sounds like it can't just, it has to be more than a glimmer.
Right.
It has to be.
You know, it's sometimes those plays that have just been sitting there for 10 years and they just can't get over the hump, you know. And finally we find a place here at New Harmony. And through the work of the actors, through the work of the dramaturg and the director, and also the encouragement of what we have are the writers in residence there too, who are the more seasoned writers who come in and help work and make this a constructive piece. And what's so great about it is it's not a competitive atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of New York, outside of L.A., outside of those areas where you're competing against other writers for what's going to get produced, this is all about the process of the creation of the script.
What are the elements that you look for among those?
The elements that we really look for are those things that fit into our mission. And like I say, our mission is really to foster those writers that enlighten the human condition, things that speak to the depth and the breadth of our human experience, whether it be from our spiritual, from our existential experiences, from those things that touch us all, that really enlighten our cultural dialogue, that speak beyond just the regular, everyday, you know, this is something that we can pass on. We want something that really goes to the depths of who we are.
What are some of the plays that have taken flight at New Harmony as part of the New Harmony Project?
Some of the great plays that, as of recent, has been The Body of an American, which is really is by a fellow named Dan O'Brien out of L.A., and he's done some great work with that that has carried around from a lot of different repertory theaters. We have also worked with people like Teresa Rebeck, who is the showrunner of Smash, that was on TV for a while. Meredith Steam, who was just with us this last year, who was the showrunner and the head writer for Homeland, and also working with The Bridge. John Pielmeyer, Agnes of God, you know, I think that's one that really stands out. That wasn't developed there, but John is one of our fellows, and he is a treasure to us, comes back as often, we bring him back as often as he can. It's just that encouragement for us.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about the New Harmony Project. At the moment, I'm talking with Ed Fry, who's the executive director of the New Harmony Project. In a little while, we'll be joined by Robert Schenken via Skype. He is an award-winning, Pulitzer Prize-winning, Tony Award-winning, and Golden Globe nominated. Boy, that's hard
right.
to trip off the tongue. Golden Globe nominated screenwriter and playwright. Among his works are All the Way, which was about LBJ, and just recently, Hacksaw Ridge.
Hacksaw Ridge, exactly.
If you don't want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. So you got a big event coming up.
We do have a big event coming up tomorrow night. Tomorrow night at the IRT. Actually, we have two events coming up. We first invited Robert here to work with the Butler Playwriting Workshop that we do every year. And that's been a partnership that we've had with Diane Timmerman and Wendy Meaden there at Butler University Department of Theater. They've been wonderful hosts for us. This year we wanted to do something a little bit different. Robert is such a gracious person. He said, absolutely, I'll do whatever I can to be there. And so he'll be flying in from L.A., where he's working on a new play out there. So that Butler workshop takes place on Saturday morning at from 9 to 11. That is sold out. It's being collaborated with not only the Butler Department of Theater, but also IUPUI and the Creative Writing Department there. So that is one of those things that that went fast for us. Along with that, we wanted to have the opportunity for the public to really have some interaction with Robert Schenken. So tomorrow night at the IRT in the, I guess, the cabaret room, Robert will be there being interviewed by the great Janet Allen of the IRT, and they will have a really a more of a conversational interview, somewhat of a master class, and that will begin at 6 o'clock tomorrow night.
And are the seats still available?
There are still seats available. If people are very interested in this, they're $20 just to come in for that, and it's through our website, www.newharmonyproject.org.
And they can go there and immediately and buy tickets.
Absolutely.
And as you say, there are about 20 seats left, so some people still might be able to squeeze in.
Absolutely.
What drew you to Robert Schenken?
Robert has been called the Arthur Miller of our time, and I don't take that lightly when we hear those words. He is definitely a playwright that is coming to his own as a cultural phenomenon somewhat, you know, working with plays like All the Way, which was a Tony winner, and, of course, Bryan Cranston playing that on Broadway. Writing shows or films like Hacksaw Ridge, and he is his very timely in what he's doing, very culturally sensitive, and has a lot to say to that. So Robert is one of those writers that has been with us over the years for the last probably 15, 20 years or so, that has just kind of made appearances with the New Harmony Project down there as a writer in residence. So we have watched him grow as a writer and come into his own. And now it's phenomenal what he's doing.
Is part of the appeal? I mean, I noticed when I looked at your website that you emphasize, obviously, the theater, but also writing for the screen and for new media. Is the fact that he is working across, you know, in my business we call them media platforms.
Right, right.
But at least working through multiple genres, is that part of the appeal?
Oh, that's a great part of the appeal. Starting out with New Harmony Project really was more of a theater-driven, it was more driven for stage. We began working with film script writers and seeing television writers come our way and developing television shows that came out of there. A couple of our founding board members, of course, were the catalyst for Home Improvement as the producers and the writers of that, and we also are finding new media with YouTube becoming a new sensation now, and the ability for people to put out new works in the new media forms. And so those are things that we're exploring right now to how do we get our stories across through those more non-traditional venues. So,
how has that changed what you do? I mean, I would think it requires a different kind of skill set or at least critical judgment.
Absolutely. You know, it moves beyond the theater realm of bringing a director or a dramaturg, those things in there. And it gives us a new level of thinking. But it also opens up new doors for us as far as how we're going to utilize our writers and how those writers that we want to bring in, that want to tell these stories, that still work with our mission, but we want to be a part of the development of these new works. So,
do you encourage people to submit then, like, screenplays they might have done?
Absolutely.
In addition to plays? How do you work with them on that? I mean, do you do some preliminary filming or whatever to show them, okay, this is how it might look if...
Yeah, we really... There was a time in our existence where they did some preliminary filming, and We found that that wasn't really working with the time periods that we had in there, but it's something that because the more seasoned writers that we have and those people who are on our advisory board and on our board, like I say, like the Meredith Steams, like the Robert Shankins, those folks who could come in and understand what script development for a film or a television show is more about.
Can say this will read well, but it will. This reads well, but it will not. It will not
absolutely
film well.
Right,
it will
right
not film well. If you are just joining us, we are talking at the moment with Ed Fry. He is the executive director of the New Harmony Project. It's a place where writers' spirits soar. It focuses really on plays, cinema, TV, new media, development of writing talent there. We'll be joined shortly by Robert Shankin. He's a playwright and screenwriter. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or find us on social media. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the theater, the cinema, TV, really the ancient art of storytelling through some form of acting. The hook for this show is the New Harmony Project, and an evening it's sponsoring at IRT tomorrow night with the award-winning playwright and screenwriter Robert Shankin. He is his play, probably the most renowned one at this time. He's also playwright for the Kentucky Cycle, but is All the Way, which was about LBJ fashioning the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And most recently, he was Golden Globe nominated for as the co-screenwriter for Hacksaw Ridge. He'll be joining us shortly. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. So we were talking about, how the mission at some level has had to evolve. You know, in Shankin's case, obviously All the Way started as a play, a traditional play within a traditional theater format, and then moved to the screen as well. Do you work with the writers on that transition? I mean, is that something that the New Harmony Project would take a look at as saying, okay, I've got this play, but I think it also might work as either a film or, a TV special or something like that, and particularly with the outlets now with Netflix and all of the other streaming services. Right. It's got to have opened up. Do you help them with that whole idea of how do you transition what will work on the stage and what might work on the screen better?
As far as what we do directly there when we're with the writers, it's all about just the script itself. Mm-hmm. And we do have different people that we that are part of our network, part of our alumni network that have been through the process a little bit. One that really stands out right now is a play called Grounded by George Brandt that has received just accolades across the board. It's an incredible play that was recently just off Broadway. It was also done at the Globe Theater in London and has made its trip around many of the repertory theaters. It is now being made into a film. And but that's one of those things that it's taken on a life of its own. So usually when that person, that playwright, leaves the project itself, what we want to know, and we do have the satisfaction of knowing, it's not about the Tonys that it wins. It's not about whether it goes to Broadway or not. It's about, does that person have the satisfaction of knowing that they're at their creative pinnacle with it, and this thing has realized the vision that they originally had for it.
You said this year there were 300 submissions.
Right.
And you selected two.
Yes, that's...
By my math, that's less than a 1% rate of or chance of success. What's it like? Because I've got to assume out of the 298 that didn't make it, there was a lot of good writing that you had to say no to.
Right. There's often a lot of good writing that we have to say no to. Fortunately, we have a great artistic director and his team that can sift through some of the less developed stuff right away. I think that's the safe way of putting it. And we narrow it down to...
Well, you do triage.
Exactly.
You go through the ones you know aren't going to make it.
Exactly.
But I'm guessing, I mean, of the 300, how many of them are things that you really, you know...
Right.
It's a wrenching decision. Does it boil down to about 50 or about 20 or about 10?
Really getting it down to around 20 and putting those teams together and and then getting down to those top 10 finalists and having those conversations. Sometimes those are very visceral conversations about why this play really deserves to have an opportunity to be developed. Oftentimes, if they don't receive that full development with us, we will look towards that writer and say, well, here's the reason why we would love for you to come in as a residency, because we feel that this idea needs to germinate just a little bit more. Maybe we can help you with that. And then the next year, or a couple of years down the road, we'll look towards more of a full development process with that. So this year we were quite, I guess, lucky is possibly a word for that, as... those two plays that we have this year, one from Kirkland and the other from Ngozi and Anyanwu, I really have to get that name down, they just stood out far above the others. And so it was one of those moments where we were just able to say, we're going to go after these two this year and work on that. So
we've gotten an email question from a listener, and... if you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Chuck has done and send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Chuck writes, where does the funding come from for the New Harmony Project?
That's a great question. We are a 501c3 organization. We depend on the funding from great foundations and great supporters and donors who have been stuck with us through the years. And that every year we are in full development mode. So come the beginning of our, we'll finish out the end of our year here with the project, and then we just turn around and start raising those funds again for the next year. And our project is scalable every year according to the funds that we receive. So sometimes we can have more writers in, sometimes it takes less writers for us, but that's the way that we've been able to handle how we work with them.
How large a budget do you work with normally?
We are about $210,000 every year.
And you're able to pay for an executive director, an artistic director, and
we're all part time.
Okay.
And we're because we just love, actually we love what we do, so we're part time in that. We all have varying other consulting and jobs that we have along the way here. So, this is something that is very near to us in the development of emerging new writers. So,
what drew you?
What drew
personally
me to this?
To, yeah.
I've been with the project for 5 years now as the executive director. And what really drew me to it was that sense of mission that I first read about it. I'd been working with various organizations, including in the courts and places like that. But after I was leaving that, it really came down to I want to give back to the arts and do what my first love is really all about, and that's the encouragement for emerging artists. And this was one of those things that popped up on my radar. I had no idea what the New Harmony Project was about. I really hadn't heard of it, which we find in the state of Indiana – which is where we've been established for 30 years, that not a whole lot of people have. Maybe they've heard of the town, but they don't know what we do. What a lot of people don't understand is that the Heartland Film Festival grew out of the New Harmony Project. You know, we are sister organizations in that. Like I say, Jeff Sparks was the catalyst for both of those things. Jeff's a great mentor and a friend to us, and as one of our founding board members. And so it's still, I want to know that his vision is still being carried out, and the vision of that those founders. And we tweak it every year, and we grow beyond a little bit of that as you do over 30 years. You know, it's a generational cycle, and so we have some new ideas that are coming on. But that's really what drew me to it, the whole idea of speaking to the life and depth and the breadth of the human experience. And and speaking of things and bringing to plays and bringing to life those things that are just so deep within us.
So. Do you ever wish that you could stage some of the works that you're doing, because it sounds like there's an awful lot of work, and you know, I mean, theater is an experience that's meant to be shared.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Where that's part of the reason we're supposed to, the audience and the writer and the actors, everybody collaborates in creating this kind of fictional world that we can enter into two or three hours. It seems to me that it would be a little frustrating to only experience about half of that.
Right. what we do every year, and I do want to say that the public is invited. We are free and open to the public. We have rehearsed readings that take place down in New Harmony every year. Those rehearsed readings will take place June 3rd and 4th of this year. They're not exactly staged, but we have professional actors who come in and read those fully developed plays at the end. So there is that moment where the audience gets to hear something that's absolutely brand new. It's never been heard before. It's never been done before. And then we hope that those move on to the next level.
We are joined now by Robert Schenken. He is a Pulitzer Prize and Tony Award winning playwright of All the Way in the Kentucky Cycle. Also a Golden Globe nominated screenwriter for Hacksaw Ridge. Robert, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's great. Great to be with you this morning.
It is good to have you here. So we've been talking about your visit here to the city and the fact that you're going to be at the IRT tomorrow night and then working with aspiring young writers on Saturday morning. Will this be your first visit to Indianapolis, or have you been here before?
Actually, I am happy to say that I have been to Indianapolis on a couple of occasions. I worked for a while on a movie about the sinking of the Indianapolis, and went to the museum there, and spent quite a few very pleasant days in your city. So I'm looking forward to returning.
So I want to talk a little bit about your involvement with the New Harmony Project. How long have you been involved with the project, and what drew you to it?
Gosh, I would say at least 15 years, maybe longer. And I think the things that that drew me to the New Harmony Project are very similar for other writers. It's an extraordinary collection of people with a unique and original, and I think a quite wonderful mandate in terms of the focus of the work. And finally, of course, there is the location itself, New Harmony, Indiana, which has such an extraordinary history and is such an amazing area. So to come and spend some time there with this wonderful group of people working intently on something emerging is a very satisfying, exciting, and fulfilling experience.
What drew you to the theater, to the writing of plays? I'm always sort of fascinated with writers, why they choose the specific genre that they do, whether it's a poet or a novelist or a playwright. What was it about that form that spoke to you?
Well, why do I breathe? it's a kind of organic impulse, ultimately, I think. I come by my theater experience honestly. My father began as a playwright, had his MFA in playwriting before he went into public television and public radio. And my mother was an actress, and I grew up in a household full of plays and a household that went to the theater and felt that attending the theater was part of what normal people did. At my heart, I'm a storyteller. I love stories. I love the narrative. I love an adventure that takes me somewhere that I simultaneously didn't expect to go, and at the same time, when I arrive there, it feels perfectly right that that's where I am. There's something deeply satisfying to me about creating a story and then sharing that story.
So I have to ask, where did the inspiration or the fascination with Lyndon Johnson began or
well, that's yeah, sure, of course. I grew up in Austin, Texas, mm-hmm. And my family, my father, had a very small and kind of quirky connection with President Johnson. My father was hired by the University of Texas to come down and create the first public television and radio station, really in the Southwest. And job number one was to get the permission of then Senator Johnson to do so, because said public television and radio station would have been a direct competitor with his own media empire. And I'm pleased to say that not only did Senator Johnson give his permission, but he would, of course, as president, sign into law the bill that created the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and created public television and public radio as we know it today. So in my house, President Johnson was thought of as one of the good people. Mm-hmm. And there's a family story, possibly apocryphal, of an invitation to visit the ranch and our station wagon getting stuck in the mud, and Senator Johnson coming out in his truck and putting his own shoulder to the fender and helping get us out of the ditch. I don't know whether that's really true. I'm too young to remember it, but I asked my oldest brother if he remembered meeting Johnson, and he said, oh, yeah. And I said, well, what was he like? He said, no, it's interesting. I don't really remember Johnson so much. What I remember is how incredibly respectful our father became around this strange man. And that may be a more revealing anecdote about the potency of Lyndon Johnson than anything he could have said directly about him. But so I grew up with him. That 64 election was the very first election that I was conscious of. I had stickers on my books, and I went down with my mom to Congress Avenue and volunteered and stuffed envelopes and got to stay up late and watch the returns and was very excited with the results. And then just a couple of years later, 18 months later, when troop levels in Vietnam had ratcheted up from 30,000 to 170,000, and my oldest brother, that same brother, was now approaching draft age, I began to have a different feeling about Johnson. And that feeling would evolve over time. Later, when I was an artist with a young family struggling to make a go of it, becoming aware of the kinds of programs, social programs, government programs that were very, very helpful to me and my family and my art, the recognition that those were part and parcel of Johnson's domestic agenda, the Great Society, then I had yet another feeling about him. So Lyndon Johnson has been in my head for a long time, and also in part because he is such an extraordinary character, almost Shakespearean, truly Shakespearean, not just big in his size, but physically, but big emotionally, big in his appetites, big in his virtues, big in his vices, his successes, his failures. He's a fascinating character.
If you are just joining us, we are talking with the Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright Robert Schenken. We were talking just now about All the Way, his Tony Award-winning and Pulitzer Prize-winning play about Lyndon Johnson. He is here as part of the New Harmony Project. We're talking with Shankin and Ed Fry, who's the executive director of the New Harmony Project. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the New Harmony Project, whose guest this weekend is going to be Robert Shankin. He's a Pulitzer Prize and Tony Award-winning playwright and also a Golden Globe-nominated screenwriter. Play he's perhaps most famous for is All the Way, which is about Lyndon Johnson. And, of course, he was the co-screenwriter for Hacksaw Ridge. We're also joined by Ed Fry, who is the executive director of the New Harmony Project. Before we went to the break, we were talking about Robert's fascination with Lyndon Johnson and, you know, the assessment that he's almost like a Shakespearean character, which is true. He's a larger-than-life figure, and in some ways because he's so contradictory and so varied, I would think at some level trying to write from inside his experience would have been difficult. How did you go about doing that and feeling like you got a handle on him, Robert?
Well, it was a challenge to be sure, and I did an enormous amount of research. I talked to as many people as I could who knew President Johnson or worked with President Johnson. The family was actually very generous with their time in a situation where you might think they would be a little wary. The LBJ Library in Austin, Texas is an excellent presidential library, and the staff there couldn't have been more helpful. There are an extraordinary number of volumes, biographies written about Johnson. He wrote his own book, and I read all of those, and a biography on at least one on each of the major figures in the play. Of course, it's also the heyday of journalism. Mm-hmm. Every city had two or three newspapers, and you had news magazines, Time, Life, Newsweek, etc. So there's tons of printed material out there. And perhaps, sort of the cherry on the Charlotte Russe, as my mother would say, Lyndon Johnson taped many of the phone calls in the Oval Office, often without the knowledge or permission of the people he was speaking to. And those tapes are being digitized by the University of Virginia, and they're posted online, and you can go online and listen to them for free. And they are fascinating, a fascinating window into the wheeling and dealing and interpersonal life of Lyndon Johnson. And I encourage your listeners to spend a few minutes and go on and listen to one of those. So all of that research, which took the better part of a year and a half, maybe almost 2 years, and then a extensive process of writing and revision, resulting in these two plays, All the Way, which won the Tony Award 4 years ago, and then the sequel, The Great Society.
Was it the man's very contradictions that appealed to you as a writer, or what part of his story, his character, did you seek to illuminate?
Well, that's an excellent question. Certainly, just as a dramatist, the character is fascinating. But more than that, I think Lyndon Johnson offers a real window into the American political landscape that we inhabit today. Mm-hmm. It's my assertion that the political world today really originates in 1964 and the profound changes that take place domestically during that year. and that you can't really understand where we are today until you go back and you take a look at that. And then finally, I would say the exploration of Lyndon Johnson and this in these two plays also affords me an opportunity to thematically to examine some issues that continue to fascinate me and always have throughout my literary career. Power, morality, and the nexus there. What is it, you know, what is the line that you draw? How far can you go in order to do good? What lines can you cross? What lines should you never cross? These are fascinating questions, which never go out of style, certainly are not out of fashion today.
I agree with you that his presidency was a consequential one, and that period is one of the fulcrums in our history. Kind of like to get your thoughts, though, on why he is often overlooked. You know, he's sort of stuck there between the unrealized, partially unrealized promise of John F. Kennedy, and then the debacle of the Nixon presidency.
I think there's a very simple answer for that, and it's Vietnam. If one could extract the terrible, terrible foreign policy decisions of Vietnam during his administration, I think Lyndon Johnson would be up there on Mount Rushmore, because his domestic legislative achievements are extraordinary. This was a man who came up through the House and the Senate and truly understood Congress. I don't know that we've ever had a president since him who has his breadth of experience and knowledge of the legislative process. And what he was able to accomplish in those first 4 years is extraordinary. You look at the number of laws, and these are major laws. He's not nibbling around the edges here. These are important: Medicare, Medicaid, environmental protection, consumer protection, education. The list just goes on. Civil rights, the 1964 Civil Rights Bill, the 1965 Voting Rights Bill, the 1968 Housing Bill. The list just goes on and on and on and on. But you can't, of course, take Vietnam out of the equation. And, there is no question but that he made terrible decisions there, and he was not honest with the Congress or the American people. And as a result, there was terrible, terrible damage done in Southeast Asia, in this country, in our whole notion of American power and the balance between domestic and foreign. It continues to reverberate. And what's tragic about it, there are many reasons, but just from the very narrow, selfish perspective of Lyndon Johnson, is he knew it at the time. He knew as he was going into Vietnam that he couldn't win and that it would very likely destroy the things that he really cared about, which were his domestic agenda. And yet the master politician couldn't see a way around it. And that, to me, is tragic.
What draws you to a project? Is it a fascinating character? Is it a theme you want to explore? What is the entry point for you when
I
it
think,
comes to the creative
ultimately,
process?
Ultimately, it's a story that I find compelling. It's a story that won't let go of me at some deep level. It's just something about it. And it could be a character. It could be the possibility of the exploration of a certain kind of thematic concern. But ultimately, invariably, it comes down to, this is a great story, and I just can't stop thinking about it. And that's really at the heart of it.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with the Pulitzer Prize and Tony Award-winning playwright Robert Schenken, and Ed Fry, who's the executive director of the New Harmony Project. They're collaborating. Robert's coming to Indianapolis to do an evening at the IRT. tomorrow night. There are a few tickets, right, Ed, still available.
That is correct.
And they can be found at?
At newharmonyproject.org.
And also then there's a sold-out event, which Robert's going to be working with the next generation of of writers. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. So, Robert, you said that to understand what's going on in this era, you have to understand that period, 1964-1965. I want to follow up on that. What things took root there that we're still dealing with the ramifications of 50-plus years later?
Yes.
Which ones? What are they?
Well, I mean, certainly, fundamentally, race. This country's original sin. There was a moment where it felt like, to many people on both sides of the aisle, that the United States was really going to wrestle with this issue and its responsibility and the consequences of its policies. And there was tremendous success achieved, and I don't want to diminish the importance of that. People forget what this country was like in 1964. Jim Crow, the system of laws and custom, state and local legislative intents to disenfranchise African Americans and to essentially keep them in a kind of economic and political bondage. That was not overthrown until 1964, which is not that far away if you think about it. Another way to look at it is that the parents of the former president of the United States in 1964 would have been guilty of a Class C felony in the state of Georgia and could have spent 7 years in prison for the crime of being married to each other. That's in 1964. Again, not that long ago. And it was an extraordinary legislative achievement to finally break the back of Jim Crow. And then in the following year, the Voting Rights Act, which was the final nail in the coffin to Jim Crow and enfranchised millions of voters who had been quite intentionally excluded from the legislative process. The achievement of that cannot be overstated, but there was, of course, as inevitable in politics and in enormous moments of change, there was pushback. And what we saw was that the South, the American South, which had largely been a Democratic bastion since the Civil War, within 4 years would become Republican. This is a very conscious result of a policy, political policy, strategic policy initiated by Nixon, the so-called Southern Strategy. Mm-hmm. And so the American political landscape flipped. I mean, it's hard to remember another time when the political landscape between the two parties in our binary system changes so dramatically. And of course, we're still dealing with the repercussions of that, even though we used to like to say that we were now a post-racial age. I think it's pretty clear that that's not really the case. Racial issues are still very, very much with us. They may have gone underground. The language with which we discuss and which these issues express themselves may have changed, but this is still very, very much with us. So there's that.
What are you working on?
Then many of the landmark legislative issues over which the two parties, Democrat and Republican, continue to fight tooth and nail and argue, and you can pick up today's paper and look at it, had their origins here: Medicare, Medicaid, Department of Education, Clean Air and Water Act. You pick up the paper and these now longstanding in our short-term memory, either institutions or laws are under considerable criticism and indeed attack. I mean, here we are talking on a public radio, mm-hmm. a radio station, and the administration has just announced that they, you know, want to end funding for the National Endowment for the Arts and for public television and radio. And, you know, we have been down this road before. We've seen an assault by then President Nixon and Newt Gingrich when he was Speaker of the House. And here we are again, refighting this same battle. What is the value of the arts? To what extent should the federal government be involved in support of the arts? What does the arts mean to the culture and the life of a country? How important should they be? All of this begins in 1964.
We've got just a couple of minutes left, but I'd be remiss if I didn't ask what you were working on now.
I am so excited about what's happening. I'm in a very, very creative period right now. I have a new play called Building the Wall, which I wrote in October, which is a response to the then Republican candidate's rhetoric about border security and immigration. And this play is having an astonishing rollout. We have 5 productions scheduled right now. We are licensing the play widely across the country. It's going to be produced in Mexico, Canada. Yesterday I got news it will be done in Austria, Germany, Paris. It's just an extraordinary rollout of this play, speaking in dramatic terms to very real and urgent events today. I'm also have a new play called Hanusen. I just finished at the Denver Theater Center, part of their Summit Festival. I'm writing a film for Joseph Gordon-Levinson and Amazon about the Klan, and another film for Robert Redford about the Manhattan Project. So I've got a lot of really interesting things going on, and I'm looking forward to coming out to Indianapolis tomorrow in support of the New Harmony Project and having a great conversation with your citizens and with the writing community in Indianapolis.
And Ed, again, if people want to hear directly from Robert tomorrow night, there are still some tickets available.
There are still some tickets available. Go to our website at newharmonyproject.org, and you can find us there.
And the conversation with him, the evening starts at?
It'll start at 5:30 for a small reception, and then 6 o'clock will be the conversational interview.
And the tickets are $20
apiece. Tickets are $20 apiece.
Well, right. I would like to thank you both. I'd like to thank my guests, Pulitzer Prize-winning and Tony Award-winning playwright and Golden Globe-nominated screenwriter Robert Shankin, and Ed Fry, who's the executive director of the New Harmony Project, for what's been a lively conversation about the theater and the arts. I also would like to thank our listeners for spending this time with us, particularly now that the NCAA tournament has started, and I'm sure many people were pulled Butler's way. I am John Krall. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Cerzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.